going on next Sunday?
Could be. Not that I know of. Oh yeah, So we'll All right, so we'll. I think we'll have our programming as usual then. All right. So I wanted to discuss this week an interesting point in the structure in which the Rambam lays out his Ikarim, which is that there are several Ikarim which overlap each other, which might be conceptually related to each other. We discussed way back when that the first and the fourth Ikar are very much tied together. The Rambam had no compulsion to combine things for no reason. The Rambam did not feel limited it doesn't seem... There's discussion about maybe the Rambam might have specifically wanted 13 Ikrim, but the significance of 13, maybe, possibly, but either way, it's certainly clear that the Rambam had no compulsion to combine things that didn't need to be combined. There are things which are definitely very conceptually related, which the Rambam splits into two Ikrim, but the Rambam, despite that, the Rambam puts in the eighth Ikar two things which one may have thought could have been separated. The Rambam puts into the first Ikar, so for the authenticity of the Torah, which is what we discussed the past couple weeks, the authenticity of the of that which Moshe received and wrote down into the Torah, which he wrote down word for word. And the Rambam, the last point that he makes in this Ikar, the point that we have underlined here, says, V'chein peirusha ha-mekubal gam hu mipi ha-gvura. The explanation of the Torah, which was received, we know as the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, is also from Hashem. V'zeh she'anu osim hayom tzura sasuka v'alula v'ashofer v'atzitzis v'atfilin v'zulasam. And that which we make today, a sukkah and the lulav and the shofar and tzitzis and tefillin and all these things, he atma hatsura sh'amar Hashem lamosha v'amar lanu, is exactly the form that Hashem described to Moshe and that he then related to us. V'hu rak movil shlichus ne'eman b'masha hevi, and he merely related loyally and truthfully or honestly the message that he brought, which the Rambam includes in the seemingly even in the word for word nature of it, in the eighth principle, that not only was the Torah Shebichsav a word for word exactly perfect transmission of exactly the message and even maybe the word that God wanted related, but the Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral Torah, is also part of that level of transmission. That the oral Torah was also, it was from Hashem at Sinai to Moshe, and it was the same level of accuracy of transmission. That it was exactly the way that Hashem had told it to Moshe was how Moshe then told it to us. So I just wanted to focus on this point that the Rambam includes in there's a lot to really discuss on this point. We're not going to spend too much time on exactly the nature of, we could spend probably weeks going through the Torah Sheba'al Peh at this point, but I just wanted to focus on for our topic that this point that the Rambam structurally Sheba'al Peh, same principle as Torah Shebichsav. The Rambam in other places has split up things which are very conceptually two halves of one point. The Rambam put Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Shebichsav into one Ikar. And there's two points that I really want to discuss, to develop. One of which is the degree to which the Torah Sheba'al Peh and the Torah Shebichsav are intertwined, and the degree to which it is necessary, the relationship between the two. And the second one is within the context of the Ikrim, to see the way in which the Torah Baal Peh really ties into the point of what we've been discussing, which is how the 13 Ikrim make the Torah something binding, make the Torah something which you cannot squirm your way out of if you accept these principles, and how the Torah Baal Peh really ties into what we discussed last week, which is that when it comes to the Torah Shebichsav, I have to know that everything came from Hashem, and nothing was Moshe's own opinion. If I said that some parts of the Torah are Moshe's own opinion, so whatever I don't like, I'll say, oh, that was Moshe's idea. I don't really have to do that one. That's not as central, that's not as ironclad, because that was Moshe's idea. So, I'm going to see how the Torah Baal Peh really fits very intimately into that same construct. So we'll start with the Rambam himself, and then we'll move on to the other point. But the Rambam himself, the Rambam in his commentary to Pirkei Avos in chapter 1, Mishnah 6, I think it is. No, it's not Mishnah 6. It's it is Mishnah 6. How come it's on this page over here? No, Mishnah 3. Of Al Tiyu Ki Avadim Misham Shemes Rav Al Manas Kabal Pras, that you should not be like servants who are serving their master to get a reward. So the Rambam first, you know, goes into an explanation of the basic pshat in the Mishnah, and then the Rambam begins to discuss a historical note, which is that there were two rabbis whose names were Tzadok and Baitus. And Tzadok and Baitus, after they were students of the author of this Mishnah, the teacher of this idea that you should not be like servants who are serving their master for the purpose of receiving a reward, that they walked out of class, so to speak, and they were discussing with each other, and they said, you heard what Rebbe said? Rebbe just said there's no such thing as reward. There's no reward for mitzvos. Right? They basically, either deliberately or undeliberately, misinterpreted what he said, and they basically said that there's no such thing as starve owners. There's no such thing. There's no reward and punishment, right? He said, don't be like servants who serve their master to receive a reward. That means there's no reward. And from that, they kind of amongst themselves, they discussed with each other, and they basically became complete heretics. However, says the Rambam, and they developed a group of followers, and they became the Tzadukim and the Baitusim, right? The Tzadukim, we famously know that the Sadducees are the Tzadukim. So that's they resulted from this Tzaduk. So the Rambam describes how is it that they developed the following. So the Rambam says, "V'kevan she'i efshar lahem lirakez es ha'hamonim saviv hamuna." It was impossible for them to gather, to focus the masses along around this new idea that they had. That their new approach was very disunified. It didn't fit together. They couldn't. We'll get back to what that means. Lachain chazru la'ames es adavar she'enem yicholim lahakisho etel hamon. Therefore, they agreed to. They basically changed their minds and they decided to acknowledge and agree to authenticate that which they could not deny to the masses. Ve'ilu he'izu al kach hayu ne'aragim. Had they gone against this point, which it'll explain to us in a moment what that is, but they would have been killed. It was that you're denying this. That's you've gone way too far. They would have been kolomar Torah shebichsav, which is the written Torah. They could not deny the written Torah. The written Torah was something which the Jewish people to tell them, you know, this the whole Torah that you have here is all a joke. That wouldn't have worked, and therefore in order to get a following, they, you know, put on a face of admitting to, acknowledging, and accepting the written Torah. V'dima kol echamehem be'enei siyato shehu mamin b'torja b'chsav. V'cholik al ha'kabal. And each one made it seem to his group of followers as if he acknowledged and accepted and believed in the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and he was only arguing on the Kabbalah, on the Torah Shebaal Peh, on the Masorah. Vishahi Kabbalah Bilti Nechona, that it's an incorrect tradition, right? That they don't have an accurate Kabbalah, they don't have an accurate Masorah. Kol Zeh Kedei Lifrok Me'aleim Kol Achiyuvim HaMukubalim Vagzerus Patakonos. This was in order to remove from themselves all of their the accepted obligations and the decrees and the establishments, to remove everything from among themselves. They couldn't say that's not true, because no one would have accepted that. That would have just been going too far. So instead they said, you know what, Torah Shebaal Peh, it's corrupted, it's an incorrect, inaccurate transmission, that we don't have. Kevan she'enem yicholim lidchos es hakol hakasov v'hamakubal, since they couldn't deny everything, so therefore they had to accept the Torah Shebichsav. So where does that get them if you accept, they'll accept the Torah Shebichsav and they'll deny the Torah Shebaal Peh? So that's no small thing. What is that? Where does that get them? V'gam kidei she'tiftach lefanehem, I'm sorry, lefanehem, derech lepirush. It opens up to them the path to commentary, to explaining, to their own explanation. Lefisha ima perish masor kvar liritzono. If the explanation is already given over into your hands, it's up to you to explain what the Torah means. There's no authorial intent that we have here. You know, it's up to you to decide what the verse means. Harehu mekel b'masha yirtzeh. You'll be lenient about whatever you want. Umachmir b'masha yirtzeh. And you'll be stringent about whatever you want. Behetem lematar also. Whatever fits nicely with your goals, with your aims, with your agenda, right? If kevan she'enu mamin be'ikar b'klaluso, since really you don't believe in the whole thing in the first place, so they have no problem interpreting it however they want to mean whatever they want it to mean. You know, if you legitimately had a belief in the ikar, that Torah Shebichsav, we really have some you know, seriousness to it, and you didn't trust the Torah Shebaal Peh, so then you would be kind of stuck, because you'd assume God wanted something, and I guess it'd be hard to figure out what it was. But they didn't have a Torah. They didn't really care about the Torah Shebichsav. Once you deny the Torah Shebaal Peh and you say that the interpretation is up to you, you can say what we see. Every sect of Judaism will point to the Torah and say, I mean, with exceptions who say that, you know, Reconstructionists or whatever it is, they don't really care enough to actually end up opening the Bible in the first place. But, you know, early Reform and Conservative, they'll all tell you that, you know, theirs is they'll bring you all their proofs from reading of the Bible. And they'll tell you this is what this means, and this is the meaning behind this. And if there's no accepted interpretation, if there's no transmission to us of what the author meant when he wrote it, it's not so difficult to twist things and to misconstrue things. And there's some things which even are simpler. If there's certain things in the Torah which we have the accepted explanation, generally with good reason to do so. But the accepted explanation is really, you know, in a simple, in context, not so universal view, is much easier to read, not the way that we would read it. But so the gates of interpretation are open. You at that point have free rein to say whatever you want, and that at that point nothing becomes binding, because okay, let's say I'll accept that the Torah is, you know, this is a binding document, but at the end of the day, that's not going to make me do anything, because I'll tell you that everything that I want to be mere symbolism and doesn't actually mean to do anything, and everything that I want to mean something more, convenience will dictate the interpretation.
The Gemara is full of rabbis having different opinions compared to how do we reconcile that?
Right. So the idea of machlokes.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. Well, so there's very different nature to these two types. I mean, when we have a machlokes, it's not two people coming along that says I decided what this is mean. Generally, there's the bigger discussion of machlokes would take more than one class devoted to, just to that. But just in short, there are those who say that all machlokes comes from a lack of proficiency in tradition, where they're arguing about, but that everything basically came from tradition, and the all of the machlokesim are where there was some one of them is mistaken in their tradition. But even if it's not that there were trying to
couldn't
to
it be like even like American like jurisprudence, like you'll have like different like American like, you know, like judiciary people, like, you know, legal advisors who have like disputes. It's still like the same, like it's still like, I guess ostensibly the same, as, yeah, like the same legal system.
Right. The question that David is asking is that aren't they just interpreting the law to be, you know, whatever they see?
So if they might not have any nefarious motives like these guys.
Right. So the most basic point that I would say is as follows: at the end of the day, even those arguments which result from, you know, biblical interpretation, interpreting verses, and all these things, at the end of the day, fall back on a system which is transmitted through tradition, which is the 13 rules of exegesis. We say at the beginning of davening every morning, the 13 Yud Gimel Mino Shatar Nidreshes Bahen. At the end of the day, that falls back on a system of when we read the Torah and we determine what the Torah meant, they don't start with, you know, well, I'll read the verse and I'll see what I think. We have a system given to us from Sinai of how to interpret the Torah. And therefore, we are not basically figuring it out on our own. We are using the rules which were given to us to figure it out. It's a little bit of an oversimplification, but at the end of the day, that, I think, will be the most basic distinction, is that even when the interpretation that the rabbis were doing is not just what they felt, it falls back on a system of interpretation which itself comes from Hashem, which the author of the Torah dictated as this is the method of interpretation. If you have two rabbis arguing about how to apply those rules, so you could have where there's, you know, either, you know, a breakdown in the transmission, or where for whatever reason there was ambiguity that there was room for both to be valid. There's a lot of discussion about the idea of elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, where there's certain elements of truth to both sides, and there are a lot of components to, you know, fully discussing, fully treating the topic of machlokas. But the most basic point is going to be at the end of the day maybe I should say two points actually. The majority of things, some people open the Talmud and think that the Talmud is mostly machlokas. The truth is the Talmud is mostly agreement. It's mostly agreement.
Oh, okay.
There is a lot of time and page and words spent on the machlokas, because at the point at which you have a machlokas, so it's going to take more time to hash out that discussion. Why do you feel that way, and how do you prove your side, and how do you respond to his proofs? And so page-wise, there might be a lot more room given to the dedicated to machlokism. I don't know, I've never done a study of that, but you know, for a simple impression, it seems like the machlokus gets the majority of the page space. But that's just every time you have a machlokus, it's going to take much more time to communicate that machlokus than it is to communicate the things they agree on. But the majority of things are actually subject of agreements. And so therefore the majority of things really are a unified tradition of what we believe. You have those things which are subject to machlokus, those things The machlokas is not, you know, this is what I decided, this is what you decided. The machlokasim are within a construct of what do we believe the tradition was, and our attempt to reconstruct the original tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu got at our Sinai. So how do we reconstruct that? So basically, the Rambam here lays out that the fundamental purpose of the Torah Sheba'al Peh maintains the structure of the Torah Sheba'chsav, that keeps it into something which is not just whatever a person wants to read it as. That the binding nature of the Torah Sheba'chsav is only maintained through the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and that is the first very important point in why did the Rambam put the Torah Sheba'chsav and the Torah Sheba'al Peh into one ikur. Is because they really rely on each other. The Torah Sheba'al Peh is that which maintains the binding nature of the Torah Sheba'chsav, only carries on through the Torah Sheba'al Peh. I want to move on to another point, which is the degree to which the fundamental way in which Torah Sheba'al Peh, we understand, relies on Torah Sheba'chsav. You have the Torah Sheba'chsav, and Torah Sheba'al Peh is, you know, the commentary on it, and we're going to explain it, hopefully also that relationship. But the degree to which Torah Sheba'chsav relies on Torah Sheba'al Peh, the degree to which the written Torah relies on the oral Torah, I want to go through that for a moment. So, the Gemara in Shabbos, the famous story of a number of converts who came to Shammai and Hillel, of would-be converts who came to Shammai, and they had a certain, you know, question, request, and Shammai pushed them off, and then they came to Hillel, and Hillel accepted them. So, in the second to last of the last of the, I'm sorry, actually the first of these stories. In the first of these stories, right where we have that bracket here, so the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Maisa benachri echad shebal lifnei Shammai. There was a story of a non-Jew who came to Shammai. Amar lo, he said to him, Kama toros yesh lachem. How many Torahs do you have? And Shammai, very interestingly, and Hillel have the same response, says, two. We've got two. Amar lo shtayim. We have two. Torah shebichsav, a Torah shebal peh. We've got the written Torah and the oral Torah. Amar le, so he said to him, Shebichsav anima mincha, I'll believe you about the written Torah. V'shebal peh anima mincha, but the oral Torah, that I'm not going to accept from you. Gaireni al manas shetilamdeni Torah shebichsav, convert me on condition that you teach me the Torah shebichsav and not the Torah shebal peh. Ga'ar bo, so Shammai basically yelled at him. V'hotzio b'nezifa, and he kicked them out, you know, very aggressively. Baal ifne Hillel, he came to Hillel and said the same thing, and Gaire, and Hillel converted him. So what happened? So they came to start learning. Yomakama, the first day, Amarle, Hillel told him, Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. Start teaching him Aleph Beis, that's where you start, telling him Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. Lamachar Apichle, the next day, Hillel switched it around on him, and he told him, you know, Dalet Gimel Beis Aleph, and he pointed to the Aleph and said, you know, this is a Dalet, right? He switched everything around. Amarle, so the convert said to Hillel, V'ha esmo lo amarta li hafi, that's not the way you told it to me yesterday. Amarle, so Hillel said to him, Lav ale didi kasamachto, oh, you're relying on me? Da'al pe nami samuch alai. So rely on me also for the Torah Sheba'al Peh. This convert, you can't even read the Torah Sheba'chsav without relying on me telling you how to read it. If you don't have me to tell you that this is an aleph and this is a beis, and this one sounds like a bo, and this one sounds like a ga, right? You can't even read the Torah Sheba'chsav. The Torah Sheba'chsav fundamentally relies on a Torah Sheba'al Peh, which tells you how to interpret it, it tells you how to read it. And if you, the most basic element of the Torah Sheba'chsav, of the written Torah, which reading it relies on a Torah Sheba'al Peh, relies on a tradition, relies on a transmission. So if you're going to you're going to agree that you can't say, well, listen, tradition's unreliable, I can't trust you. If you're denying that, you don't have a written Torah either. You're trusting me, you're believing me to give you the Torah Shebichsav. Part of the Torah Shebichsav is a Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebichsav is intertwined with the Torah Shebaal Peh, and you cannot have one without the other. Therefore, the authorial intent, the meaning of the Torah, just like the words themselves you need me for, the meaning also you need me for. The Chazal have the Mesorah, have the tradition to tell you what God meant when he gave over the Torah Shebichsav, and therefore you should accept that also. But before we go back to that point, I just wanted to point out, often when we have, right, as Shammai himself said, we have, you know, it seems like two Torahs. We have the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. And I think in a very superficial kind of way, when we think about it, so we maybe say, you know, why did God need a Torah Shebaal Peh? You know, seemingly just, you know, there's some things in the Torah, some things in the written law, some things in the oral law. This one made it here, and this one made it here, and why is this? Well, what makes the oral Torah into the oral Torah, and why is it different than the written Torah, and why do we need to, and what are the two different things? Why do some things seem to make it into the written version, and some things got left over to the oral transmission?
Write everything down,
right? So what is the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh? What is the idea that splits Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? If I ask why one thing falls in one place and one thing falls in another place, what is the distinction? So the Rambam, in his Hakdama to Shas, which hopefully someday we will try and go through, the Rambam writes the following. He's describing the Medrash that says that the entire Torah was told to Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai, at Har Sinai, the Klalim and the Pratim, the Dikdukim, all of the everything, all the details were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Rambam says, I'll give you a mashal. Hinei lecha mashal. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Amar leMoshe Basukos Teshu Shivas Yamim. God told Moshe, Basukos Teshu Shivas Yamim, sit for 6 days, for 7 days in the sukkah. And that's pasuk in Vayikra. Achar kach, afterwards, hodia, he told him, shehasukah hazos chova al hazacharim v'al nekevos, he told him that the sukkah is a mitzvah for both men and women, v'she'en acholim chayavim ba, and that sick people are not obligated to in the sukkah, v'lo holchei derech, and that travelers are exempt from the sukkah, v'shelo yesachucha el betemach aretz, it can only be, the schach can only be from things that go from the ground, and that it can't be with this, and you can't use kalim, and all of these details of what the sukkah is all about, and the size of the sukkah, okay, and every all of that, says the Rambam, was all the from Hashem explained to Moshe Rabbeinu. Says so too with all of the mitzvos, that the mitzvos were told with the klalim and the pratim from Sinai, and says the Rambam, v'kasher ba hanavi alav shalom, when this mitzvah of sukkah came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and by the second underlined point here, nasna lo hamitzvah hazos u'peirusha, he gave him the mitzvah and its commentary, v'chein hashesh meos v'shalosh esrei mitzvos, so too with all of the 613 mitzvos, heim u'peirusham, the mitzvah and its commentary and its explanation, hamitzvos bichsam, the mitzvah is what is written down, v'hapeirush alpeh, and the explanation of the mitzvah is be'alpeh. The difference between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaalpeh is that the Torah Shebichsav is the mitzvah. What is the mitzvah? That is the defining point of the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah. And the Baal Peh is, how do you fulfill that mitzvah? What's the description of the mitzvah? What's the explanation of that mitzvah? That's what the Torah Shebaal Peh is. The chiluk, the distinction between the two. One is defining the mitzvah. What is the mitzvah? And the other one is the commentary which describes how do you fulfill that mitzvah. The Rambam himself, in the Yad HaChazaka, in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, the Rambam actually follows the same structure. If you look at the beginning of every book of the Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam has a list of, he said that there's, you know, Sefer, whatever it is, and there are X amount of mitzvos in this Sefer, and here they are. And the Rambam lists what the mitzvos are. And it's the headings of each section. And then the Rambam goes through the halachos and explains the details of those halachos. If you try to use one as a key to the other, it's very difficult. The Rambam sometimes has where you'll have, you know, one mitzvah with chapters and chapters of halachos about it, and sometimes you'll have one chapter which covers several mitzvos. The Rambam's chapter headings are not a guide to help you find what's, you know, to locate what's where. The Rambam's chapter headings are what is the Torah mitzvah the Torah mitzvos that are going to be described in the upcoming chapters. And then the chapters themselves are how do you fulfill the mitzvah? What is the description of that mitzvah? So I'll give you an example, a very telling example. The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah says there's one mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of learning Torah. Then the Rambam, when he gets in the actual halachos, has a mitzvah of teaching. It says, how do you fulfill this mitzvah? You fulfill this mitzvah by teaching Torah and learning it, and he quotes the verse of Vishinantam Levanecha, that you shall teach it to your children. The Rambam is defining what is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is learning Torah. How do you fulfill the mitzvah? By teaching Torah to others. The mitzvah is defined as learning Torah. Learning Torah is learning Torah when you have taken the Torah to such a point that you can give it over to others. That's how you fulfill the mitzvah. So what is the mitzvah? If you ask me, what mitzvah are you fulfilling? You're fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah. But when it comes to the description of what that mitzvah looks like, how do you go about fulfilling that mitzvah? That's the chapters that follow with all of the details in them, is explaining exactly the description of how that mitzvah is performed. And that's the relationship between the Torah Sheva'al Peh and the Torah Sheva'al Peh. And that's how we were describing before, that the Torah Sheva'al Peh is that which gives form to the Torah Shebichsav. We'll get back at the end. We're almost out of time. I have one more thing I wanted to go through. We'll get back to the end. The question that David expressed of why do we need, why not just write everything down? So we'll get back to that if we have a minute, or at least to briefly address that point. But the Kuzari has somewhat of a polemic diatribe against the Karayim, the Karaites, in Maimer Shlishi, in the third section of the Kuzari, where he very much points out this point that we were describing, of that the Torah Shebichsav really needs a Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Kuzari writes, we're just going to read the parts that I underlined, which are going to be, he goes on for pages, I just underlined some of the highlights. He says, Lahavanas Sefer Torah's Moshe, v'hakriyabo, drushim kama kitos mosre mesores. In order to understand and read the Torah of Moshe, there are a couple types of tradition which are required. Kasa mesores manuasa nikud. There's one which tells us the vowels. How do you, right? The Sefer Torah itself doesn't have vowels in it. The vowelization is one type of tradition which we have. The Kasa mesores satamim. The mesora of the trup, which serves as the punctuation, that also is necessary for certain parts of understanding the flow of sukkim. Vaha pisuk, umesoras osios, and the pisuk, where verses stop and end, and what's the and the source of the letters of what of which what which letters are which and how the order of the letters and the sounds of the letters. Then we need a tradition in order to understand what is written in the Torah. Ki ha'inyin o hatzivoy shehis kavna Torah b'mila misuyemes. The idea or the command which the Torah is intending with some word, makiv yoser mi muvana ha'metzumtzum shel ha'mila, often includes much more than just the strict meaning of that word. So the Kuzari now goes along to give a lot of examples where the Torah Shebichtav, Tzimtzum means, it can mean several things. It can mean hidden or it can mean restricted, right? he now gives several examples. He gives the first example, we'll skip, but we'll just add, Hine, HaTorah Oseres Lachol Basar Beliz Vicha. The Torah forbids us to eat meat which has not been slaughtered. Yomru li, so tell me. Mahi ha'pu'ula matir es achilas basar ba'alchai. What is the act which permits eating flesh of a living creature? Ha'im shchita, is it shchita? O shema bichlal ze gam nechira, maybe it also means gouging it. The kol tzuras hariga shetia, or maybe it means any type of killing an animal. Kill it however you want. It's a very important question, because the Torah itself is clear that it's not however you want. The Torah itself says, you shall slaughter the animal ka'asher tzivisicha. Do it as I commanded you. So now let us ask, how are you supposed to do it? The answer cannot be, God says you cannot eat it if it's not shechted. And the answer cannot be, and we ask, how do you shecht it? So the answer cannot be however you want. God doesn't really have any kapeda on that. God doesn't really have any particular strong feelings about that. God said, do it as I told you to. So let's ask, how is that? How do you do it? If you don't have a Maseches Zvachim, or you don't have a Maseches Chulin, you don't have a Pawix, so you don't know. The Torah says something, and you have no way. You're stuck. The Torah says you can't do it without this, and doesn't tell you to this. Says that, he goes on, we have an Isser of Chelev, an Isser to eat a certain part of fats of the animal called Chelev. Haisi wrote it. I want to know. She yifartu li eich lenaker es abasar. How is it that you're supposed to be to do nikor ha chelev? How are you supposed to remove the chelev? Eiza chelev ku chelev. And which part is chelev? Which part of an animal is called chelev? The eiza hu ashuman, which is the part which is called shuman, which is what you're allowed to eat. The yitnu li geder gvul bein amutar ha'asar. Give me some point of delineation between that which is permissible and that which is forbidden. Some way which has some reasonable basis, some reasonable foundation. God said this part of the animal is mutter to eat and this part of the animal is also to eat. God meant something or he didn't mean something? Did God just like say, and now you call whichever part you want, the chalev, and whichever part you want the shuman? No, you've got to give me some definition which has some basis. So what's your basis? You're just going to make it up, whatever you think? Obviously, God, when God said it, he meant something. So what is it? Tell me, where do you know that from? Hine Akos of Omer. Skipping to the next one. The verse says, Al Yetze Ish Mimikomo B'Yom HaShvi'i. A person shall not go out from his abode on the seventh, from his place on the seventh day. Yomar Li HaKarai. Let the Karaites come and explain to me. Ma Kavana Sakos of Mikomo. What does the verse mean by Mikomo, by his place? Ha'im Beso, does it mean his house? Katsero, his courtyard? Rashuso, his domain, his property? Shunaso, maybe it means his neighborhood? Medinaso, Umigrash Iro? Maybe it means his province, his country, or is the surrounding zone of his city? Vare Hamila Mikomo, Soveles es Kola Perushimalalu. The word Makom tolerates, can fit with Perushim Nosafim and more. We see the word makom used in many different contexts in the Torah. It can mean a lot of different things. Which one does the Torah mean? I'll just note, you know what Karaim do? Karaim actually, I think, I don't know if they, I don't know how they observe this now. They say the home and the machmir ones stand in the same spot for all of Shabbos. Right? Just stand in place. If the Torah said makom, it could mean a number of things. Don't tell me God didn't care. God means something when he says things. And which one does he mean? Yivarli mahi ha-malacha asur b'shabbos. And tell me, God said don't do malacha. Well, what's malacha? I don't know, but be very careful because your chayiv skila gets stoned to death if you do it wrong. So there's something called malacha which is forbidden, and you know, good luck figuring out what it is, right? If you don't have a Torah, but the Torah doesn't tell, the Torah only lists two malachas. The Torah lists havara and hotzah. So burning and carrying. So which one is so is that what is prohibited on Shabbos? It's a very important thing to know because you got a death penalty if you don't do it.
Hmm? Didn't Slavka get stoned because he collected wood?
So that might be hotzah, or hotzah and ma'avir dal adamos v'sarabim could be a sea, right? So there's some, I guess, unclarity about exactly what Slavka did, right? But it's clear that there's something you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. And it's very important to know what it is. And if you don't have a forthcoming explanation, you're kind of stuck. So, says the Kuzari, that tell me, Mr. Karite, so what do you and do you not do on Shabbos? Skipping to the bottom here, he goes on a little bit longer, but we're going to stop here. Klolo shel davar. The general idea, ap hadinim ha-meforashim b'toraim sesumim. Even those things which are made explicit in the Torah are sesumim, are somewhat sealed. Kol shekein adinim sesumim. How much more so those rules, those laws which are sealed are hard to figure out. HaTorah sasma velo perta b'meforash dinim eila. The Torah sealed itself and did not make clear, make explicit these rules. Shehistamcha al kach shedvar mevorim b'torash velpeh. Because the Torah relied on the fact that it is all made clear, it is all clarified in the Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Torah Shebaal Peh is not just another, an additional point onto the Torah Shebaal Tzav. The Torah Shebaal Peh is fundamentally tied into Torah Shebaal Tzav in such a way that you do not have one without the other. And therefore, the Rambam combines the two into one ikur because they are one thing. The two go together in such a way that you don't have the ikur of Torah Shebaal Tzav if you don't have Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Tzav becomes something at best uninterpretable, and at worst something that you say it means whatever you want if you don't have the Torah Shebaal Peh. Just very, very briefly, we're already over time, and answer the why isn't everything written in the Torah? The nature of, and this gets into the distinction we were describing before, the nature of the Torah Shebaal Peh means the practical application of the Torah. The Torah Shebaal Tzav tells you what is the mitzvah, and the Torah Shebaal Peh tells you how do you perform it. Shlomo HaMelech says, "Asos svarim ein kates." You could make a limit. You could make a limitless amount of books if you wanted to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh. Why? Because in practical application, every time, every situation, you need to know what to do. There's an infinite amount of permutations of how do you apply the Torah Shebaal Peh. Is something where you're applying a principle to every situation. And therefore, the Torah Shebaal Peh relies on, you know, tshuva svarim are a continuation of Torah Shebaal Peh, the way in which a rav applies the halacha to a given case following the rules of how halacha is applied. But that's Torah Shebaal Peh. You cannot write an exhaustive list of Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is taking the Torah Shebaal Tzav to its full conceptual level of what is the concept of this mitzvah and giving it definition and manifestation into how is it applied. And the way in which it is applied is limitless. It applies to every step of life in all time, in all generations, in every point of life. That's something that requires a living Torah, requires something which is applied as at each thing in its own situation, each thing in its own way. And that is the role of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, there are six books of the Mishnah, because there are six sides to every physical object. There's, you know, right, left, front, back, top, bottom. Every physical object is bound by three dimensions, each of which goes in a positive and negative axis, right? That's six bounds to every physical object. The Mishnah is taking the conceptual level of the Torah Shebaal Tzav and putting it into the physical domain, the physical dimension of applying it in this world. And therefore, you can't write it down. It's something which every situation has its own application of the Torah Shebaal Tzav, and that is the way in which the Torah Shebaal Peh is intrinsically necessary for the Torah Shebitzav. It is that which takes the Torah Shebitzav and puts it into an actionable something which we can apply to every situation.